About issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. This is Don Nolan. Steve won't be with us this afternoon. He is under the weather, and I'll be sitting in his place. We are very happy to have two very interesting guests with us this afternoon from an organization called Crosswalk America. Did I get that right?
You got it.
All right. The two individuals are key players in this organization, and they're going to tell us about what Crosswalk for America is. We have with us Ms. Rebecca Glenn. She is a laywoman with the United Church of Christ. And we also have Reverend Eric Elness, who is a pastor at the Scottsdale Congregational United Church of Christ in Phoenix, Arizona. And both of you are very much involved in a group of 10, as I understand it, that are here in Champaign-Urbana, and you've come a long way. Isn't that right?
We've come from Phoenix, Arizona, actually, which we left on April 16th of this year, on Easter Sunday. By the way, thank you both to Steve Shoemaker and to WILL and to you yourself for having us on.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ms. Glenn.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What is Crosswalk for America? That's not right. Is it Crosswalk America?
Crosswalk America is an organization focused on changing the face of Christianity in America. We want Christianity to be seen more as loving and compassionate and inclusive, and feel so often that the strong voices, the loud voices we hear in the media and with some well-known Christian leaders don't speak the kind of Christian faith that we have come to love and feel like that's our journey in life.
Mm-hmm. And how did this organization get started? What's the history?
It really got started, the seeds of it come from October 2004 when my congregation was just utterly in turmoil over just the role that the radical extremist right in Christianity was playing in our culture and in politics and everything else. And they'd just kind of broken one too many last straws, and people were saying, I'm just tired of one congregation member said, I'm tired of being a Christian but. Mm-hmm. That is a Christian. When I go out, my friends discover I'm a Christian, I feel like I have to say, I'm a Christian, but I love the earth. I'm a Christian, but I love people of other faiths. I'm a Christian, but I love gays and lesbians, bisexuals and transgendered people. I'm a Christian, but I believe in the separation of church and state. I'm a Christian, but I believe that faith and science can go together in the pursuit of truth. And I'm just tired. I want to be a Christian, just simply a Christian.
Well, if anyone would like to talk with our guests as we get further into these topics that you just introduced us to, this is a call-in show, and you are welcome to call in and put any guest over the any question to our guests over the next hour. You can call locally 333-9455 or 333-WILL. You can also reach us through an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's talk a little bit more about the event that led to this. You said there was turmoil in your congregation. What is your describe your congregation a little bit. How did this come about?
I'll take that one as a member of that congregation. I think people are just feeling frustrated with what's happening in society around them, as shown a lot through politics, but just a general feeling that Christianity stood for things that we didn't stand for. And we wanted our voices to be heard in the mix. And we're frustrated with the fact that media would say the Christian point of view and pick one that was so alien to what we believed, and assuming that there was one point of view. And people wanted to make a difference in the world. I'll speak for myself individually. When I very first heard the idea, which was what started our organization, and the idea came from Eric, and it was, what if there were principles of compassionate and inclusive Christianity, and we were to walk those across this country? And when I first heard that idea, it hit me like a ton of bricks, and next thing you know, I said, I want to do that. I quit my job and decided to volunteer full-time for Crosswalk America. And there were a lot of other people when they first heard this idea really had a strong reaction. And when they read the belief statements, the Phoenix Affirmations, which are all built around loving God, loving neighbor, loving self. They said, yes, these are words that I can use to start speaking about my faith, and I'm no longer going to be silent about what matters most to me in this world.
Were there other organizations that you teamed up with in order to start this off?
Yeah, the originally, Rebecca referred to the Phoenix Affirmations, and this was a document that originally I and some clergy in Phoenix, part of a clergy group called No Longer Silent, Clergy for Justice, started working on, and we were trying to kind of distill the essence of what more moderate, progressive Christian faith is all about. What does the path of Jesus look like to us? And word quickly spread to other pastors and lay people in the Phoenix area, and then that got out beyond Phoenix and eventually involved biblical scholars, theologians, pastors, and lay people from around the country, from all of the mainline denominations. And the document went through about 20 major and minor revisions until we hit a sweet spot with version 3.8. We label it kind of like software. Mm-hmm. And where it just didn't seem to matter what denomination or a person came from, or if, you know, if they're outside of denominations, that it just clicked for them, and they people would say, this articulates my faith. Mm-hmm. And we have a version number on them because we're trying to make it clear that this is not the new dogma that's going to stand for all time. We believe that God's still speaking to our world, and we need to be open and flexible to that. And so there will always be a version number on them, and they're called affirmations, not creed. So we're not trying with this document to define who is a Christian and who's not. We're simply trying to articulate our understanding of Christ's path.
We have a caller in line one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Your question? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
No, well, that was well-timed. I was just turning down my radio. I'm Jim Berger, and I'm a Presbyterian, and one of the things that crosses my mind, and it needs to be, I think it deserves to be mentioned at some point, you folks have one of the best, if not the best, online concordances, right? I know that's what I've used in the past. Crosswalk.com?
Well, we are Crosswalk America. There is a crosswalk.com. I was thinking that's a Christian store of some sort.
So it's not affiliated with it, with you folks?
No, this is Crosswalk America. We're at crosswalkamerica.org.
Separating out the websites here.
Excuse me.
Oh, no problem.
Well, check out our website. Maybe you'll find some stuff that's interesting to you.
All right, what is that? What website is that?
Crosswalkamerica.org.
Okay.
And we've got a lot of resources, including the Phoenix Affirmations, both in the summary form and also in a longer form. And we also have an online blog that where we have daily updates from the walk route, the people we meet, the stories we have to tell, and incredible photographs that are taken by our documentary film team as well.
Okay, great. Just for the record, I do have a very positive feeling about the way you are expressing this thing as is, but I will clear the line for someone else.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Let me repeat again. The numbers are locally 333-9455. You may also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455, if you'd like to put a question to either one of our guests this afternoon. Why don't we talk a little bit about just what the Phoenix Affirmations are. As I understand it, you were the author of a book, is mm-hmm. that right, on this?
Yes, the book is called The Phoenix Affirmations, A New Vision for the Future of Christianity, and it's available at bookstores nationwide and also at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And
what publisher?
Josie Bass, mm-hmm. and national publisher, and Secular Press. And it is really the first commentary that exists on the Phoenix Affirmations, about 10 pages per affirmation. It's a quick read, but really was meant especially for lay people who may have friends that or relatives. Everybody's kind of has a fundamentalist in the family or a friend or what have you, and they constantly, I hear from them, my friend says, da-da-da, and I disagree with that, but I don't know how to articulate where I'm coming from. And the book was specifically made to then help people articulate their faith and base it in everyday life rather than a whole bunch of theological mumbo-jumbo, even though the book is a book of theology.
Martin Luther nailed 95 theses to the Wittenberg Cathedral door. Is this in any way connected to that act or something like that act or resembling it in any way?
It's inspired by that act. We were certainly we wanted to to, in a sense, nail it to the doorway of America, so to speak, in Washington, D.C. We'll probably, people say, now, are you really going to nail something? Well, we'll probably tape it.
I'm not sure you could get up to the White House door.
That's right. Well, we'll actually have our final event at Foundry United Methodist Church in D.C., which is a few blocks.
Which one said?
A Foundry United Methodist Church. Very well-known church there, very prominent. The Clintons were members there. I think George comes there occasionally, too. And they graciously agreed to open their doors to us.
What date is that?
September 3rd. And that's Labor Day weekend, and people are flying in from all the country. Already we have confirmation from Bishop Jack Spong, or John Shelby Spong. He's agreed to come and support us pro bono. He believes so much in what we're doing. And we have some others who are not yet confirmed, but we're very, very excited about the event. We'll have national speakers and incredible music.
And the date, once again?
September 3rd, Labor Day weekend, 4 p.m. And we'll have a walk into Foundry United Methodist Church, too, of a couple miles, so people can join us for the last mile or two of the walk.
I was just going to ask you, if anyone was interested, how would they go about finding out how to join?
If you look on our website at crosswalkamerica.org, in the events section, it'll describe it. And as more details are made known about how people will join to walk the last, you know, that last day, those will be put in the event section. We also have a full section showing our route, where we have been and where we're going. And we've had a lot of people who've joined up to walk with us along the way. We say, come walk, you know, come walk for 5 minutes, a mile, 10 miles. And we have a shuttle van that can take people back to their cars. And people have found that by walking with us, and we have found by walking with them, that it's a wonderful experience. One of the messages we really want to bring out with when we talk about the Phoenix Affirmations and faith in general, that faith is active. The Phoenix Affirmations, each affirmation, it's a positive statement, and it starts with an active verb. So it calls us to do something. And as we walk and talk with people, it can be an almost a magical experience. I found that I've met people more deeply in a shorter amount of time than I have in so long in the past. And I've had some great conversations with people about their hopes and dreams and what they'd like to see happen in our country to make it better. So they can, on our website, there's information about that as well.
We have a gentleman who joined us on Easter Sunday to walk the first mile with us, and he's going to walk in Washington, D.C., the last mile and in a walker.
In a walker?
In a walker, yeah, yeah.
Now, I've heard you refer to what you call spiritually homeless people. What do you mean by that?
Spiritually homeless people are those who are not attending any place of community for faith or worship. And there was a poll that was conducted last summer, and in that poll, people were asked, what faith are you? Nearly 9 in 10 self-identify as Christian. Yet only 2 to 3 of those folks are finding their way to any community of worship. So that leaves at least 6 out of 10 that aren't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And we ask ourselves, why is that? And I feel like I have a much better feel for that after all the different people that we've met and talked to along the way. And a lot of people feel like they've been bullied out of church. You know, they weren't good enough. They weren't following the right rules. They didn't feel welcomed. And there are a number of people who feel like they were bored. And there wasn't that much to offer them, and so why would they spend the time going to church? And, you know, we think that's really a shame because there's so much that can be gained if you have a place of worship that speaks to you and you can work with people to make things better in this world. So we really offer a voice to those folks, and our goal is to rally like-minded people who believe similarly, and also to show, and you know, as we've talked to people in small places, large places along our journey, faith in America looks a lot different than the media and popular speakers would have you believe. You can't look at a church and say, oh, that's a conservative church. People are conservative there. We have found people that resonate with the affirmations in all kinds of churches, from the most fundamental to the most progressive. And you also can't say that everyone in a progressive church is going to agree with every affirmation either. So there's a lot more complexity to faith in America. Mm-hmm. And so we need to take the time to talk to people and find out what they're really thinking and get past our labels and our polarization in this country.
You mentioned those who are bored among the 6 out of 10 that aren't in an institution. Isn't it the case that a lot of those are finding their way to what has sometimes been referred to in the media as mega churches, large entertainment complexes, it often seems like, that are attracting the 30 or unders? Is this what you're talking about, or are you talking about something else? United Church of Christ is so-called main line, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
And a lot of the people moving in this other direction are moving away from main line because they found it to be spiritually unfulfilling. So are there any cross purposes here at work with your work?
I don't think we're out to create a bunch of mega churches, but we're also not out to say that all mega churches are different or are not fulfilling for people. I think there's a number of reasons people pick the church they go to. Sometimes it's who you know. Sometimes it is very much what programs are offered. You know, if you have children and you want them in a good educational system, or you want them to make friends in a church environment. And with a lot of the mainline churches losing members, it's hard to offer so many programs. And so I do think people look for that sort of thing. But really at the heart and soul of it, in my mind, when I go to church and feel like I'm fed spiritually, and I have to think more and think deeply about what I believe and what I'd like my purpose to be in this world, that's first and foremost what I'm looking for in a church. And if you find people like that really matter, and you feed the deep meaning, then you put other programming on top, justice programs, education. To me, that's what makes a really dynamic and growing church. And I feel like that's the kind of church I go to at Scottsdale Congregational. And we've met a lot of people in churches along the way that there are churches like that out there.
And not all the people who leave the mainline church go and find themselves in the mega churches. A lot of them find themselves as part of the what might be called the church alumni club, or a church alumni association. They just simply drop out of the participation in any kind of faith life whatsoever. And a lot of those people tell us that the reason they did so is because there were a lot of burning issues for them that the pastors or the church themselves never addressed. And a lot of those burning issues are the very ones that are in our Phoenix affirmations. We were in Columbia, Missouri not too long ago, and Rebecca and I sat down with three gay men in a brew pub. They had self-identified as people who are outside the church, and one of them actually said, "With all due respect, I hate Christianity." And we wanted to know, we wanted to hear from them. And being gay, they were, of course, very sensitized to some of the very vocal statements that some church folk make about gay people, particularly those who hold up signs saying, for instance, AIDS is God's answer to homosexuality. And they were very aware of that vocal opposition to homosexuals, but they're also aware of the silence of churches who may not be in that ring. They asked
more than silence in many cases.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but even the churches that are supposedly more neutral or supportive, where are they? They said, "We know pastors in this town who are very much in support of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered equality, who are too afraid to say anything from the pulpit." And it was, where are they? Why should we even bother stepping inside of Christian church, even one that's supportive, if no one's actually going to raise a voice on our behalf? And they asked, if somebody who was putting up signs saying, "Well, cancer is God's cure for smokers," or "Diabetes is God's answer to obesity," the people would be coming out of the woodwork to protest that. Or when Fred Phelps's organization were protesting, picketing funerals of gay people, they're asking, "Where are the churches?" And yet, when they started picketing military funerals, everybody comes out of the woodwork and making special amendments to the Constitution and so forth to prohibit that. A lot of people are simply bored out of the church because the churches have not been bold enough to take a public stand. So that's something that's actually quite joyful.
So your congregation is inclusive?
We are an open and affirming church, which is in the United Church of Christ, the designation of those who are not only open to those of other of different sexual orientations, but also affirming of them, meaning that we do not feel that sexual orientation in itself is a sin.
There was a famous, perhaps infamous to some, advertisement for the UCC, United Church of Christ, that did not get aired. Can you summarize what that was about, and is this connected to your response?
There was the bouncer ad, and and in that ad, it basically showed people a beautiful old style church with a bell and the cross, and people trying to come in, and these two big-looking men that to some people saying, oh, no, step aside, you know, and someone in a wheelchair, oh, you can't come in. And then two people of the same sex was maybe holding hands, you can't come in. And, yes, a lot of the TV stations would not run our ad. And
nationally, wasn't it?
National stations, yes. And, I mean, the good news is that the news picked up on it, and we probably got more publicity through that than we would have otherwise. But what kind of a country do I mean, there's nothing wrong with that sort of advertising, yet it wasn't shown on the air, and people seem to be able to advertise for exclusion and intolerance, and I don't get that. It makes sense to me.
I should underscore too that was the United Church of Christ ad, and the Crosswalk America is not affiliated with the United Church of Christ, although there are a lot of United Church of Christ churches supporting us, and Rebecca and I are both of that denomination. We really have representatives of every major mainline denomination and others part of our organization.
Let me just reiterate the numbers if you would like to call in and participate in this conversation. Locally, you can call 333-9455, or an 800 number would be 1-800-222-9455. What is there about the face of Christianity that you're not happy with? You say you wish to, one of your goals is to change the face of Christianity. I presume you mean in the United States. How would you summarize the features of that face that are troubling to you?
Okay. Well, we'll start with exclusion, that not everyone is welcome at the table, and homosexuals are the top of the list of those not welcome. But I'm not totally sure that others are entirely welcome all the time either. I think that's a big problem. One of the other big issues in the face is there's those that will speak saying, you know, don't worry about the environment. You know, there'll be the second coming. Use up all that you need because God will provide, and we're not taking care of our planet. And that's just totally irresponsible and in my mind, way outside the Christian faith.
You see that environmental issue, the lack of concern for the environment as characteristic of Christianity in the United States, or a dominant characteristic?
I think there's a lot of more people starting to speak up and say, wait a minute, we need to take care of our church. But there are some well-known Christian leaders that have also blended that into politics, saying, oh, we can drill here and we can do this here, and we need to take care of us, the people. And I guess I'm sort of leading into the next piece of the face that I don't really like. And in Crosswalk America makes a stand. We make a very strong stand towards separation of church and state. And we have a big problem in this country where that wall of separation is totally crumbling. And, you know, it's one thing for people to believe what they believe. And I strongly want to support anyone's right to believe what they want to believe and say what they have to say. But for them to then legislate that, what they believe is religious morality on the rest of us, that's where they've gone way over the bounds. And the other big one I would highlight at this point is faith and science. And we're trying to rewrite our science books in some people's attempt to make it match what they think the Bible says, and we're robbing our children of their educational future.
Yeah, on that separation of church and state, let me just read you a quote from D. James Kennedy, who's a Christian Dominionist in one of the largest
Coral Ridge.
Yeah, Coral Ridge, yes, exactly. He says, as the vice regents of God, we are to bring His truth and His will to bear on every sphere of our world and our society. We are to exercise godly dominion and influence over our neighborhoods, our schools, our government, our literature and arts, our sports arenas, our entertainment media, our news media, our scientific endeavors, in short, over every aspect and institution of human society. That's frightening to us.
That is a startling comment. Now, you think that's a widespread belief among Christians?
We actually feel that it's not representative of the majority of Christians. In fact, we quickly forget that it was actually people of the church who were largely responsible for creating the separation of church and state in the beginning, including Congregationalists and, believe it or not, Baptists were very instrumental in creating that wall of separation. They knew, if you read the Bible, there is, I mean, even some of the very conservative leaders will say, well, in the Bible, there was, no, you know, it was a theocracy. Well, In the Bible, actually, there's quite a lot of suspicion of the power of the state, and any of the prophets, for instance, who were simply in the king's court, were always seen as mere yes men, or usually seen as mere yes men of the king. And it was those who arose outside and criticized from the outside that were really revered. And Jesus himself saying, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God's. That's more endemic of the, or more characteristic of the Christian tradition as it came to the United States. Now, it's not to say that early Christians in the United States didn't try to seize control at times and inflict their will on others, but always that they went back to that ideal of the separation. It's more for the protection of the church than the state. I mean, remember those Congregationalists, they came from England, and where they had been persecuted by a religious majority. They escaped and went to Holland and then eventually to America on the principle of separation.
Cornel West made a distinction, I don't think it's original with him, between what he called Constantinian Christianity and prophetic Christianity. Constantinian Christianity being Christianity that is allied with state power since the time of Constantine, and prophetic Christianity going back to the prophets and the early church speaking truth to power. Is it your view, given what you've said about reaffirmation of separation of church and state, that the face of Christianity has become Constantinian as opposed to prophetic?
Yes.
Yeah.
What are some examples?
I think that largely you look at, for instance, the proposed amendment to the Constitution with respect to same-sex marriage. That is, in my view, a clear violation of that separation of church and state, when most of the arguments, most of the arguments against same-sex marriage come from a religious sphere, and yet there are quite a number of religious groups from mainstream traditions that affirm that very act. And so even the United Church of Christ itself voted in its last General Synod to affirm same-sex marriage. And so what we have here is one religious group again, and whether it be the majority or not, trying to impose its will on the free religious practice of others.
Mm-hmm. Are there other examples besides this gender issue where church and state have dissolved and Christianity has become more official and too close to power that you can think of?
Well, certainly if you
look... Or that concern you?
One thing that concerns a number of us greatly, and we've heard as we've gone across the country from a number of people, is looking at the war in Iraq. And this is coming from people who originally supported that and people who didn't. Underneath this whole conflict there, and everybody says, it's about oil. Well, yeah, okay, oil... That's an important piece. But underneath the subtext, there is this understanding of the appropriateness of other faiths and the legitimacy of other paths to God. And would it be quite so easy to go over there if the average Christian leader in the United States really valued Islam, for instance? And actually, coincidentally, the majority of Christians in the United States, according to the very poll that Rebecca cited earlier, which was taken by Newsweek and BeliefNet, the average Christian actually does believe that other people from other faiths can find salvation or go to heaven. Mm-hmm. 7 in every 10 Christians in America affirm that, or 8 in every 10, rather, including 7 in every 10 evangelicals. But the leaders themselves, however, the statistics are far skewed.
Mm-hmm. Pat Robertson has made the comment on 2 or 3 occasions that atheists and Muslims should not be elected to political offices in the United States at the national level. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what it is, what you think you have achieved in your walk since April. You surely have met a number of people who have responded to your message and indicated that they're willing to support it. What is your success story so far?
We have so many stories of people coming out of the woodwork saying, thank you for mm-hmm. speaking the faith that I believe. I remember one woman in a very small town, very conservative town, going to a very fundamentalist church. And so when she wanted to talk to us, we were a little bit wondering what she would say, because if you were to lay the beliefs of that church next to the Phoenix Affirmations, you'd see a large difference. And yet she came up to Eric and I and said, thank you so much for walking. My son came out to us as homosexual a few years ago. My husband has disowned him. I have no one to turn to at my church. I don't know who I can talk to in my community.
She's in a small town.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she said, thank you for walking for me. Mm-hmm. We have that story in different flavors over and over again.
She felt a little less alone.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so for the people that find themselves where they are definitely the majority of opinion, it's nice to find out there's others out there. But even in a lot of churches that are very progressive and would affirm the Phoenix Affirmations, for them to find out there's other churches and other groups trying to make things happen and ask us, how can we link arms with you so our voice can be heard? And it's not seen as a bunch of splinter groups, but seen as a large, large voice speaking for a lot of moderate and progressive Christians. How do we link with all of you to make our voice heard? We've heard from, I remember one woman that came up to me and said, you know, I'd gone to this church my whole life, and I grew up in it, and I love all the people there dearly, but it just, I didn't feel like my views politically matched what was going on in the church, and yet that shouldn't matter at church until someone said to me, well, how can you go to this church? You're a Democrat. And she thought, oh my gosh, there should be no discussion. I mean, that mm-hmm. doesn't have any test in what church you go to. So she joined a church that met her needs better, and they love the Phoenix Affirmations, by the way. And she said, you know, switching to this church is the greatest gift I have ever given myself. Mm-hmm. And you talk to parents of where they feel their kids haven't been welcomed into church, and I mean, it's just story after story. So we feel that this message really does resonate with a lot of people. And the big challenge right now is just getting it out to more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite a number of the people that we've met in these communities actually have gone on walking with us even as we've left the area. We have this program on our website at crosswalkamerica.org called the Walk Wherever You Are program, where people are wearing pedometers, which are step counters, and they put them on their belts, and they get them either through our website or at you know, Sports Authority or various you know, other sporting goods stores.
Oh, and they add miles to your list?
Yeah, they add steps, and they walk in support of the walk. We have people walking all the United States and even as far away as Great Britain. And as of this morning, we have over 17 million steps logged into that site in support of this walk. And so you know, people who have run into this on the walk path are walking, and also people who have never met us mm-hmm. in their lives. Are walking in support of these affirmations.
You've been at this for almost 4 months, right, since April?
April 16th, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long
14
time.
Weeks. We've walked 1,800 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And
From Phoenix to here.
To Champaign-Urbana, mm-hmm. uh-huh. And it's been an amazing journey. One of the things that I think is really important is to slow down. You know, we all zoom through life at 65 miles an hour. And when you stop and walk and you think at walking speed, 3 miles an hour, the world looks a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the big problems we have in life, all of us are probably somewhat to a lot guilty of this, is we don't notice things. When you're going that fast, you don't notice the flowers along the side of the road. You also may not notice some of the animals that have been killed on the side of the road, but you miss what's happening around you. And so that's another beauty in walking.
And your family is with you back home. What? Do you get to go visit back or what?
Oh, she's cheating right now.
I have a husband and a son that are keeping the home fort down in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband actually happens to be in this area, so I got to see him last night and tonight. Mm-hmm. So that's been a really great treat.
I understand your daughter is with you?
And my daughter is walking, and it's so funny. She says, don't tell people I'm your daughter right away, because she decided to do this walk through her own decision process. Neither mm-hmm. of us knew each other had decided. But it's great to have her along, and she studies peace studies and sociology, and it's really interesting to see her take on this and for the college-age group. And what does religion mean to them?
I think Katrina told me about a month before she told you.
Probably. The mother's always the last one to know.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question?
Yes, hello. Well, I have a comment, also a question. I think we're going very, very fast-paced, and I think walking is a wonderful way to slow down. And I'm really congratulating this whole movement. I tuned in sort of late, so I didn't hear everything. But I think walking is a good way to slow down and get attention, and I think the cause is really worthwhile. And thank you so much for doing it. I don't know who's doing it, but thank you so much, and I would like to be part.
Thank you for your comment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, and we encourage you to join us in walking with us by getting onto our website at crosswalkamerica.org, and you can sign up for our Walk Wherever You Are program and log in your steps just a way of joining up with us as we walk across the country.
Have you had difficulty opening dialogue with people along the way? We're so polarized in so many different ways. How do you handle that? Do you actually go outside of your own comfort group and affiliation and attempt to talk to people who are literalists, exclusivists, fundamentalists, or whatever you want to call them?
Well, we have a number of times done that, sometimes by accident and sometimes by design. One of the churches, for instance, this is a volunteer, we had actually contacted in Hereford, Texas, and we'd asked them for lodging and perhaps a speaking opportunity if they so chose. And the pastor, Tracy Dunn Noland, at the Fellowship of Believers Independent Church, which is made up of about 60% Baptists.
Not me.
Not, what's that?
Don Noland.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Tracy Dunn Noland.
I just wanted to pin that down.
Yeah, thank you.
Although I am from Texas.
Okay, well, maybe you know her. She wrote back to us saying, we'd love to have your walkers come, and we'll provide them homestays and feed them, and we'd love to have Dr. Elness come and preach. However, we should let you know right up front that you should take it as a pleasant surprise if many, if any, of our congregation agree with your Phoenix affirmations. However, we have a very strong tradition in our church of really wanting to hear alternate points of view and valuing them. And so I called Tracy and asked her, and first of all, thanked her for inviting us, despite the fact that they may disagree with some of our affirmations. And I asked her, now, which ones might that you might have your congregation have the harder time with? And she said, oh, Affirmation 5, which states that Christian love of neighbor includes engaging people authentically as Jesus did, treating all as creations made in God's very image, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, age, physical or mental ability, nationality, or economic class. It was the sexual orientation part that, right, that she stuck on. And she said, we also had to laugh that three of your core team are vegetarians. And bear in mind, this is Hereford, Texas, population 15,000 humans and 750,000 cattle. So I asked her, well, what does your congregation have a harder time with, gays or vegetarians? And she said, actually, quite frankly, we can get along with pretty much anyone so long as they order steak. And they provided a wonderful barbecue for us as we came into town with vegetarian alternatives, and they treated us like kings and queens, each of the families. They invited me not only to preach but to help lead a Bible study on the Dead Sea Scrolls on Sunday morning. And since they had she had made a point that they're very proud of their tradition of honoring and listening to alternative points of view, I preached about half my sermon on Affirmation 5 and openness and inclusion of gays and lesbians. And the response, the energy of the room was just absolutely very warm and welcoming, and person after person coming up and thanking me, and several of them saying, you know what, I have a gay son, or I have a gay cousin, and I'm really glad to hear this message. Mm-hmm. And Tracy herself mentioned after we left that having us there really helped her start a silent conversation with a number of people in her congregation. Mm-hmm. I felt good about that.
Have you had direct opposition, and how have you handled it?
We had some protesters in St. Louis, and it was kind of interesting in that they were an anti-abortion group, and we don't take a political stand on abortion, but they, I think they had a problem with what we were doing, and they picketed outside the Episcopalian church we were speaking at that morning, and then they moved over to Metropolitan Community Church of Greater St. Louis to picket. They also added to their signs the opposition to marriage equality. And in they had some pretty ugly pictures on placards of fetuses that most people would not want to look at all. And they entered the church during the worship service, and when those of us from Crosswalk America stepped forward to introduce ourselves, they were yelling things in a heckling mm-hmm. manner. At the end of the service, the preacher of that church said, you know, they've come at us with some hate and some negative statements, but we will come at them with love. So remember that we are out here to love people. And I was just really impressed with the way the church handled it. And so we all, you know, some people went out the back door if they had children, but most of the people came out the front, formed a chain of folks holding hands, singing Jesus Loves Me. Drinks and refreshments were offered to the protesters. And a lot of folks from Crosswalk America went up to talk to them and say, you know, here's what we're walking for. Here's our beliefs. And in most cases, we're received fairly well. One of our walkers, Merrill, you made a point to tell each of the protesters that he loved them, and one woman said, well, I hate you real good. Mm-hmm. And that's disappointing, but the rest of them responded pretty well. And so it's kind of interesting to enter in a dialogue in a situation like that where clear mm-hmm. lines have been drawn in the sand, but if you offer a friendly hand, it can work in most cases.
Yeah. I had a little less welcoming experience with them having a robe on as a clergy person just before my service. I think a number of them would not shake my hand and or look me in the eye, and then were heckling me as I was out there. So mm-hmm. it wasn't quite as smooth.
Well, this is largely why you're doing it, isn't mm-hmm. it? Because of these attitudes
yeah.
out there.
And people can actually read about that and see pictures of the protests on our website at crosswalkamerica.org in our blog section, the Follow the Walk blog.
What's the hardest part of this journey? Is it the physical walking, the time, the being away from home, or what?
Boy, that's a tough one. It's hard to be away from loved ones. I'd have mm-hmm. to say just general tiredness. mm-hmm. You know, we walk in two teams 5 days a week. Each of us are walking 14 miles 5 days a week, mm-hmm. which is a lot. And then we meet with people and want to share our message, and we want to be upbeat and listen and be friendly. And we have great homestays along the way, and they want to mm-hmm. stay up late talking. And, of course, we want because we're excited about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So over time, it kind of, you know, I find myself getting really tired. And I just worry that if I get too tired, I won't be able to present the kind of face and love that I'd like, and that I won't dialogue in a good listening way. So that's a worry. But when we talk to people and they're excited about what we're doing, and when we talk to people who disagree, we've had several of those, it's really interesting to hear why people believe what they believe. And if we listen honestly and we don't come with an agenda that it's my job to transform your thinking into mine, that I'm just trying to listen to what you have to say, see why it is, hope you'll listen to me, and maybe we can both leave the table thinking a little bit more about this issue, mm-hmm. then some good things come out of that.
Our own Senator Barack Obama has spoken up recently in speeches and in articles about the stereotypes about religious people in general and being Christian, and has attempted to confront some of his own Democratic colleagues in the Senate and the House and elsewhere with their own snootiness, aloofness, stereotypes that religious people are somehow less than educated, that all Christians are evangelical and right wing. I assume you've read some of his work. He's gotten some national attention. Sounds to me like you are attempting to correct some of those impressions about what a Christian is or what a religious person is.
Definitely. And, you know, that kind of corresponds to, for my personal hardest time in the walk is knowing the message we have to proclaim, and yet how easy it seems to be for these really negative voices to get publicity and to get the front page news of the paper and so forth. The day we walked through Kansas City, for instance, here we were going through that city, and a religious story made the front page of the Kansas City Star, the largest paper in the area. It wasn't about Crosswalk America going through and proclaiming a new vision for the future of Christianity. It was that Jimmy Baker, fresh from prison, was setting up shop in Branson, Missouri, and that was the big story of the day. Or just driving off after the walk a couple of days ago and turning on quite frankly, an NPR radio, NPR on my radio, which I always listen to, and in hearing a story in which the commentator actually said, Christians, that is blanket word, Christians believe that Jesus will come back at the end of time, and it will be a violent and bloody affair, but then it will issue a reign of peace. And I said, well, yeah, Christians, as in those people who read Left Behind, may believe that, but there's a whole lot of us out there who find that idea plays no part in our faith, and in fact read the Bible very differently than that. And I was surprised, you know, even on NPR, we can have the dominant points of view kind of from the fundamentalistic side creeps in.
The complexity of Christianity just amazes many students who take courses in its history, and even in its contemporary practice, it is sometimes bewildering what falls under the heading of a Christian across the world, and certainly here in the United States. It's a good thing to see that much diversity.
I think we're becoming increasingly sensitive, for instance, with Native Americans. The statement, well, Native Americans believe that X, you know, is just absolutely, you know, wrong. There are so many different tribes and different peoples within that group. One day we hope that that the people also see that it doesn't no one any service to say that Christians believe. There's not one Christianity. There are many Christianities.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to many people to realize that there are Lebanese Christians. In fact, it is incorrect to speak of Lebanon as a Muslim country, and so rockets that are landing there are landing on Muslims and Christians, and in Sudan there are Christians who are oppressed, and Ethiopia is to a large extent predominantly Christian and with very different traditions. It is good to see that you're attempting to address some of those stereotypes. Where are you going to go next? Where are you headed? What's your path?
We're headed towards Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't go too much further north or south. We take kind of a flat line from there, as I understand the map.
Pretty much make a beeline. We'll hit a little bit of West Virginia and a little bit of Pennsylvania, do an event or two in Pittsburgh, and then cut down into D.C. through Maryland. So,
what are you trying to skip between Indianapolis and Pennsylvania? There's a lot of territory.
Oh yeah, no, we go through a lot. We go through Ohio too.
right.
Absolutely, in Columbus and Dayton.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you only have so many weeks left, right? September what? 10th?
September
10th?
3rd.
6 weeks left.
Oh, 3rd.
Yes, September 3rd.
All right.
Labor Day weekend. So book your tickets early. We keep hearing from people as we go across. I'm going to fly out and join you for the big party.
What's going to happen at the church when you're there? What is the nature of the ceremony? You're going to have
We're going to have live music.
What kind of event?
It's a celebration first and foremost, and of our joyous Christian faith, and the celebration of the end of the walk and the beginning of a new face of, you know, building the new face of Christianity. We will have Bishop Spong speaking, and we are looking for, you know, we're kind of closing on the deal for other speakers. We will have live music, and it's just going to be a good time.
We'll also start the whole thing with a major press conference, and we already know that Bob Abernathy's Religion and News Ethics Weekly program with PBS is going to cover that for a national broadcast.
Bishop Spong, tell me a little bit about him. He's been around for quite a while, and how did you single him out?
Well, he first became aware of us through the work that we were doing with I was doing with No Longer Silent Clergy for Justice, because that group had been very much outspoken on lesbian gay equality. So that's how we first became acquainted. But then later, when we formed Crosswalk America, he got a hold of some of our materials and contacted us and said, "I'm going to write an article about you guys next week. Can I email you the article just for, you know, proofing to make sure I got my facts straight?"
Mm-hmm.
And he sent us that article, and both Rebecca and I think just about fell off our chairs when we read it. I mean,
published?
Yeah, he has an email list of about 25,000 people who subscribe for about $40 a year, and then also it's read by 150,000. And he just came out just fully in support of this thing. He talked about it being one of the most important things that's been happening in the last century, and how it's a light shining in the country that may just change things, and He also cited James Forbes, who has already come out in very strong support of the walk, saying
James Forbes, who's the
senior pastor at Riverside Church. He's the one who succeeded William Sloan Coffin there.
Who recently died,
and James Forbes actually conducted his funeral. James Forbes has said that what he sees in this may very well be the seeds of the next great awakening, which, again, we were kind of stood up in the wow. Phyllis Tickle, also one of the most revered sociologists of religion in America today, said that she felt that the Phoenix Affirmations are the first positive, systematic articulation of where Christianity is headed for the next 500 years.
Wow.
We've been very we've been very humbled by a lot of good insights from and views from people we respect highly.
After September 3rd, what happens?
Well, we want to continue to get the word out on this message, and we have, you know, several things in our strategy. We want to empower lay people to have dialogues. You know, we think that people speaking up and talking about their faith helps in a lot of ways. So we'll be doing efforts, you know, and some of that's just, some people don't have the skills or they don't have the practice at that, and we're not good at that in our country. And so that will be a big piece. Another thing that we want to do, we're working on the final plans for this, but we'd like to have a weekly show through the internet and talk about some of these matters and interviews with people and dialogues with people. And we want to do resourcing for churches to help them. And we want to connect all the people that we've met so far and those that we have yet to meet that are interested in this message so that we can have, in cases, we can have common voice.
So you're creating a log or a net of network of these people?
Yeah. One of the things it's really impacted us as we've gone across the country is just how strong that more fundamentalistic voice is in the media in terms of, I mean, they own tens of billions of dollars worth of satellite communications technology to pipe their message over the broadcast system. They own radio stations in the smallest towns and the most rural of areas all across the country. They're they've got all kinds of print publications.
Very loud bullhorns.
Yeah, very loud bullhorns, very sophisticated network, and the mainline church is very far behind that. And we really feel that the internet is an intriguing source of future ability to really get our word out, especially in the realm of video broadcasting and podcasting. We can, in a sense, be the next Koreans or Chinese, except with respect to mainline faith. You know, when I went to Korea in 1999, for instance, I was doing a seminar on worship for them and a church back there, and I asked to make an international call on a payphone, and they said the guy who I asked took this little tiny object around his neck and gave it to me. It was a cell phone, about a third of the size I'd seen of any cell phone in the United States. And he said, "Here, use this." And I said, "Oh no, the cost of the call is going to be, you know, prohibitive." He said, "No, I am connected wirelessly to the internet. Your call is going through the internet. It'll be free." And I just couldn't believe, no way. I just figured he's being excessively polite.
Got a lesson in technology on the other side of the pond.
Yeah, exactly. And this was in 1999. And what had happened was the Koreans never had landlines. They were too poor. And so when they finally, their economy started building, they invested in what was the cutting edge of technology and rode that. And we in the mainline church can do that as well, or we have mainline or progressive faith. We're currently seeking people who will talk with us about becoming lead gift donors to help us form, to really ride that current edge of technology so that we can use through, you know, the video and the internet and television. They're all kind of merging, and we can actually jump into that early and actually have an incredibly sophisticated broadcast network for a fraction of the cost that it currently takes.
So you're going to have an online newsletter, an online blog. What else have you got in mind?
Resources? Newsletter, blog, video casting, actually doing television quality broadcasting over the internet, podcasts.
And we didn't mention the thing that we are actively working on right now is we have a documentary of this entire journey. Mm-hmm. So we will be releasing our documentary and hope it will make the major theaters.
Which is being documented as we speak, yes?
Yes, we are being documented as we speak. And
smile for the camera.
Yeah. We have some amazing footage of the journey of people we've talked to, people of different points of view, and really highlighting that faith in America does look different than most people would suspect. Mm-hmm. And through the process of creating the documentary, we have you know, we'll have hundreds of hours of film. All of that won't go into the documentary, but we can also resource groups and churches on how do you dialogue and what do people think about things. So it's a great asset that can be used in a large number of ways.
So how many – excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, and I just mentioned Josie Bass, when they contracted with me to write the Phoenix Affirmations book, actually contracted to make a second book too, which is being written on the walk. It's really kind of the Phoenix Affirmations in motion on the walk, and mm-hmm. I'll be turning in that manuscript a couple weeks after the walk's over, so that will be coming out next year.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you get through with all of this and you go back to Phoenix, how large is the organization? How would you characterize the group? There's 10 of you here today. Who else?
We've met a lot of people on the road that are very enthusiastic about that, this that changed the face of Christianity.
Individuals?
Individuals, churches, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we will build a national organization with, you know, networking all those folks together, mm-hmm. and people beyond where we've walked. I mean, we have interests outside of the country without even going after that.
I understand that people are following you outside of the country online, right?
Yes, in Great Britain and also in Australia. They contacted us asking if we have chapters down there, and if not, would we like to start some? But we also have about 50 core members of Crosswalk America that make the mechanics work, and they're, most of all of them are volunteers. And so there's but what Rebecca's referring to is, I think, is really important, that it's not just the people who have signed up on our email list and so forth, but it's the people who have found each other in all these towns. As we've gone through and we've walked through their towns and different churches have shown up, and they say, oh, I didn't know your church was into this, or I didn't know you were. And they're saying, let's get together and let's do something here in our local areas. And that's going to be very powerful in the future for us.
Are you going to speak to politicians, people of influence? Or are you going to try to avoid that arena? Or are you just going to work with churches?
We're happy to speak on the topics of this theology and how it matters to people with anyone that we can. And we would love to have people thinking more deeply about matters of faith and how that ties into their political decision-making process.
Well, there is lobbying, and a number of progressive groups do a great deal of political lobbying in Washington and elsewhere. Are you going to
join
that?
Right.
You're not going to be?
No.
Why is that?
Well, we really feel that the best way we can resource the movement is by really being those who go a step deeper than what happens to be the political agenda of the day, and really look at those principles that really guide our political decision making. We encourage our membership and our friends to be politically active. We ourselves are politically active in our private lives. We're passionate about various issues, but we will never tell you how we think you should vote. We trust you to make those decisions as a reasonable human being, and we want to be in discussions and dialogue over the principles.
This is part of your affirmation of the separation of church and state, yes?
Yeah.
Some have argued in this country that separation is that in fact you really can't separate church and state at some level. In fact, Senator Obama has suggested that politicians, Democrats and Republicans, speak their faith but figure out how to do it intelligently and civilly and appeal to faith in the public arena. Would you agree with that, or do you have a problem with that?
Well, I think it really gets into the realm of, you know, can you separate faith and practice? Well, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all kind of a piece. However, there is a big difference between talking about the principle, for instance, of, let's say, take Affirmation 3 from the Phoenix Affirmations, where we say that Christian love of God includes celebrating the God whose spirit pervades and whose glory is reflected in all of God's creation, including the earth and its ecosystems, the sacred and secular, the Christian and non-Christian, the human and non-human. There's a big difference between discussing that and discussing, well, should we be drilling in Anwar or not?
Right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Rebecca Glenn, laywoman with the United Church of Christ, and Reverend Eric Elness, Scottsdale Congregational United Church of Christ in Phoenix. We very much appreciate it, and you were very stimulating. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, it's been a pleasure.
Being on Keeping the Faith. Good evening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580, The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake, suspension, preventative maintenance, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
You might have thought the ukulele was gone for good after Tiny Tim tiptoed through the tulips for the umpteenth time. But singer-songwriter Victoria Vox is doing her part to bring the ukulele back into popular music. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we'll meet Victoria Vox. Also, the master musical craftsmanship of Antonio Stradivari. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.